welcome. Welcome to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live 5 days a week, and it's a pretty intense job. There's lots of work involved here, and, you know, by the end of each week, just so fracking exhausted. And I must apologize to people because I have people that call me on Saturday and Sunday. My Saturday and Sunday is Sunday and Monday here in New Zealand kind of thing, because, you know, live from the future and what have you. And they find me very grouchy and I don't want to talk to them and stuff like that. It's because despite the fact that the world goes to hell in a handbasket every single day, I understand that having a weekend off, preferably every weekend, is absolutely necessary to recharge your batteries just so you can keep fighting the scumbaggery element, I reckon. I could be wrong. Maybe I should just attempt to burn myself out. I don't think it's a very bright idea. My very special guest is Max Mogren. Is that how you spell it?
Yeah, that's right. It's Mogren. M-O-G-R-E-N. Mogren. The Swedish name. I guess the Swedes pronounce it Mugrien, but I'm one of those Americans, so we mispronounce everything. We call it Mogren.
All right. Smoking Mogren, and it sounds kind of like a, some sort of a nickname for Mogadishu or something like that, you know, we just call it the Moog.
I try to stay as far away from war zones as possible, so.
And you're living in the United States. Are you living in the United States? Well, it looks like you're Shiite Muslim out of luck there. There's a war on everywhere. All right, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, Max?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Vinny. Well, first, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be on the show. I also want to thank our friend Glenn for putting us in touch with each other. Glenn Ingram on Facebook, real tuned-in, aware guy, great guy. My name is Max Mogren, 31 years old, from Minnesota originally, kind of flat, cold, northern state, currently living in the Bankster's Playground of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. You may know the Federal Reserve Bank has their big summer meeting here every summer, and the head of the Central Bank of Israel was here last summer as well. But, you know, what can I say? I'm a ski bum. I've been ski bumming for the last 10 years with a few little hiatuses to kind of make sense of what's really going on in the world. Spent 14 months as assistant to an investigative guy named Mike Rupert, who he's all right. And then kind of big on the geoengineering, chemtrails, depopulation agenda. Used to be really into peak oil until I learned about the suppression of free energy technology. And I agree with Vinny completely that you need to have a weekend. You got to take some time off from fighting the bullshit in the world. Otherwise, you'll go you just can't crazy there.
And unfortunately, speaking of that, you have to say BS on FCC-regulated radio.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pardon me. Apologize to the censors. I mean, yeah, no.
But even then, isn't the fact that we can't say the word connoted by BS, isn't that rule in itself is BS? Really?
Absolutely. I mean,
is anybody listening to this show under 18, under 16, you know, under 12? You know, everybody uses this word in terminology, but apparently it's offensive and you can't say it on radio. It's freaking stupid. I hate it. Ugh. And anybody who listens to me on other shows, I'm just like, I swear like a trooper when I can. Honestly, I do.
Apologies for the cuss words. I'll try to keep it PG.
Yeah, don't apologize. I like to keep it FU.
All right, fair enough. So, yeah, that's me, my blog. I'm really active on Facebook trying to spread the message on, you know, geoengineering, weather warfare, free energy, you know, little economics, little politics, and little outdoor recreation.
Speaking of geoengineering, we've got Dane Wigington on tomorrow.
Is that right? That guy's a legend, man. I'm glad you got him on. I've been listening. You know, I saw What in the World Are They Spraying shortly after it came out. I was still pretty skeptical of the whole concept at the time, but then did my own research and started studying the sky, and it became pretty freaking obvious that that they're doing a lot with our skies, you know, and screwing with the weather. So, you know, I've listened to a lot of Dane's recent interviews, and I'm looking forward to hearing your show tomorrow.
Yeah. Apparently, he's been scaring the hell out of a lot of people. I think that's how I kind of got in touch with him. Is a bunch of people said, "Dude, you should get this guy on your show. He scares the bejesus out of me." And yeah. I was thinking that, wow, you know, is there? There's an expression called wigging out, you know,
yeah,
you know. And so when Dane freaks you out, it's you're Wiggington out.
Yeah, and he's good at it too because he's got. He's got some facts to back it up, and he's got that, you know, he's got the, definitely seems like a guy who, is, you know, obviously very passionate about what he does. Doesn't seem compromised in any way. And, you know, recently in the last couple of weeks, he's been talking a lot about methane mass expulsions in, Siberia around the Arctic. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm on the fence with that, but, and the overall effect that would have on the changes in the climate, because the you know in my opinion the you know the climate change agenda is pretty straightforward. They're just trying to implement carbon taxes and tax you know hit us up twice for the fuels that they force us to use the outdated yeah. fossil fuels. So when he kind of has gone off on the carbon mass expulsion thing, it'll be interesting to hear what you guys have to say about it tomorrow because. Mm-hmm. Another guy I really respect is Jim Lee of Climate Viewer, and you know, Resonated is his name. He's a smart cookie from South Carolina, and he's kind of jumped on that train too. So you know, maybe, but both of them they make it pretty clear that it seems like the geoengineers are the ones that are causing the changes to the climate up there. You know, it's not CO2 causing the changes; it's the fact that they're spraying all these. Metallic aerosols that's causing the heating that's causing these methane expulsions. So in recent interviews that I've heard Dane give, he says, you know, his stance is still appears to be let's stop geoengineering, you know, because we don't need weather warfare. We got enough warfares going on already.
Well, I think the New World Order's kind of declared war on everything, you know, everything. Everything that's natural, everything that's good, everything that's decent. Why should the weather be any different?
That's you know that's how I approach it with people. A lot of you know it's being an activist towards raising awareness on geoengineering. I run into all these people that are skeptical, and I say, look, they're playing God with the food, they're playing God with drone warfare. There's nothing more godlike than zapping somebody like Zeus with a bolt from the blue. Playing God with all the surveillance technology, playing God with the economy, creating money out of nothing, something out of nothing, that's pretty trying to be God, you know, with the whole fiat currency thing. And so why the heck would they stop with the weather, you know?
Yeah, well it's just occurred to me as you're saying this, that's what the New World Order wants to be. They want to create a technological capacity so that they can be God, okay? They'll have all the ability, like God's all-knowing, and they've got surveillance on everything, so they know everything. God's yeah. all-powerful, and there's nothing that they can't do or destroy or change. You know, God is omniscient. So he's all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-being. So he can be everywhere at once. And I spoke to David Icke once, right, and I asked him, so David, seeing as you've spoken in about 50 countries, have you ever gotten off the plane and not instantly recognized the apparatus of the New World Order system around you? He's like,
right.
No, everywhere. You know, it's just the such and such branch of the New World Order whenever you step off the plane. And when it comes to carbon taxes and climate change and things like that, people ask me, you know, how exactly could they control everything through carbon tax? I don't get it. And it's just like, dude, can you name me a single human activity that does not produce carbon dioxide?
Right. You got to drop a penny in the bucket when you fart.
See, it comes down right there. You can't do anything without producing carbon dioxide. Hence, if you wanted to control all human activity, what would you tax?
Exactly.
You know, it's just really that simple.
Yeah, just that simple. And then they force us to use these outdated fossil fuels when the technology to, you know, technologies that render fossil fuels totally obsolete have existed for a century. And you can read about the histories of all these brilliant inventors who were suppressed over the last 120 years since Tesla. So it's heartbreaking, really. But at the same time, with, you know, I didn't have a clue about this stuff until a couple of years ago. And so, it, you know, my own life is proof that the word is getting out there, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And also the suppression of, well, the oil being what's called abiotic. Have you heard of abiotic oil?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's the blood of the planet, you know. We're literally tapping into the planet's veins, and then we wonder why we've got so many earthquakes and such, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's no, I mean, there's no, you know, that's like the lubrication of an engine. You try to run the planet's a giant geodynamic engine, right? It's a perpetual motion machine. People say there's no perpetual motion, but for all practical purposes, our planet is a perpetual motion machine. If it stopped, we'd be toast. Our entire solar system is a perpetual motion machine. You know, it doesn't, it's not a closed system because nothing in the universe is. But, yeah, so you're taking the oil out of the engine that is our planet. You're taking the blood out of our living organism of a planet's veins. It's no wonder that we're going to have problems. But I'm with you on the abiotic oil, and but I see these other technologies that could just, you know, I want a speeder bike like Star Wars, Vinny. Let me be
honest. Yeah, absolutely. I want a bullseye womp rats.
I'm shooting for the moon. I want my kids to have speeder bikes. So what can we do to make that happen? And I don't want to have to pay to fill up the gas tanks on them. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, this baby's going, I would love to be able to go camping with the technology that's sort of like, you would never run out. So, because I've seen, I watched this movie 127 Hours. Have you seen this movie?
Yeah, with that guy who cut his arm off down in the desert.
Yeah. And what I noticed all throughout that movie was huge quantities of chemtrails. And he even has a hallucination where he sees like 20 planes crisscrossing each other doing chemtrails over his head sort of thing. And, you know, he's sitting there, he's running out of water, he's running out of food, he's running out of heat, running out of this, that, and the other. It would be really choice if we had some kind of like a Swiss Army type technology device that's capable of creating water out of the atmosphere, creating electricity out of the atmosphere, and maybe some form of sustenance as well, and something that would be light, heat, water, food, and something that you can construct doing. You know, like a little multi-tool, you know, just like, and then pop out one of the little devices. Man, it would be really cool. Like the perpetual camping machine.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I'm a ski bum, climber guy, surfer guy, and it's like, you know, if guys like me didn't have to pay to fill our gas tanks up, we would never stop just cruising around having a good time, you know what I mean? And the New World Order doesn't want that to happen, but I do. And
yeah.
I want my friends to have that too. And, you know, it's funny how many people, you know, I know for my generation here in the States, how many people feel guilty every time they fill their gas tank up because they've been brainwashed into believing that their emissions are destroying the planet. And then they just is like getting slapped in the face two times. It's like, oh, this is expensive. I'm, you know, spending $120 to fill my car up and I'm feeling guilty about the emissions when that doesn't need to be the case, you know? So I'm with you that we could definitely use the free energy camping machine. And it's funny you mentioned the chemtrails in 127 hours. I've got some buddies down in Joshua Tree. My good buddy Paul down there is an active geoengineering chemtrail guy, and he's taken some of the craziest skyscape pictures I have ever seen in the last couple of months. Just heavy-duty spraying, big repeating wave cloud formations. that, you know, just beyond a shadow of a doubt, there's nothing natural going on up there.
Yeah, it's real ironic, though, is because that old saying, seeing is believing, ain't necessarily true. Because you can show people these things, you know, the crisscrossing, you know. Yeah, I mean, I thought of an idea. You know those sign writers in the sky, you know, they write messages like, marry me, Tiffany, or whatever. I was just thinking of paying a guy to go up there and spray the word chemtrail into the sky and see everybody pointing at it going, look at the chemtrail.
If you can come, I'll put $100 towards whatever that costs then. That'd be a good way to get it out. What's funny, on Valentine's Day, I found a picture of a heart that was skywritten heart. And often with chemtrails, you see these kind of weird bulbous formations on the bottom, you know. And it's like, well, obviously that's not just water vapor. If there are some molecules falling out at a faster rate than other ones, you know, if you get these bulbous formations, you've got something going on beyond just a simple. There you go, looking good, baby. Nice shirt.
Well, I was thinking about getting a shirt that says "I love chemtrails."
Yeah, I mean, they're delicious. I've been enjoying here in the States, we've got there's this thing that's pretty viral. There's an article, chemtrail flu. Have you caught it yet? And you know, I've been dealing with a horrible upper respiratory infection for 3 weeks, man. It's brutal. And you know, it's funny, when I first woke up to the chemtrail phenomenon, I was living out on the California coast, and I was doing a lot of road biking, you know, trying to stay in shape, biking, and there'd be days, you know, I was just becoming aware of this, so I had my smartphone with me, I was doing the flight tracker on the phone, and watching the planes while I was out biking, so I could see, you know, I'd watch the planes, see some leaving a long, lingering, spreading, disgusting trail, and then others leaving a normal contrail. So I was able to, you know, immediately check their elevations, what kind of plane it was, right on the phone. And so it became really apparent to me. But on days when there was a lot of that kind of weird, unnatural haze up high, I would get this tight sensation in my chest. I'd get an ache in my heart and a tickle in my throat. And I knew that I was breathing something I really did not want to be breathing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. It reminds me of those people who put a cigarette in their mouth and go, I'm just going outside for some fresh air.
We'll be
right back, ladies and gentlemen. Max Mulgrain is my guest.
Mulgrain.
Yeah. Like Mowgli off the Jungle Book. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that you cannot run or hide from. It's the Finney Eastwood Show. You can't run from us because we will chemtrail you. My very special guest is Max Mulgrain. Like Mowgli of the Jungle Book. Welcome back.
Thanks, Vinny. Good to be here. Much appreciated.
Yeah. Stripped down to the simple bare necessities, I see.
Yeah, that's what we try to do. You know, in the last, I've kind of tried to disengage from the system as much as possible over the last 6 years since my awakening began. And basically, I've been homeless, intentionally homeless, all but 6 months out of the last 6 years.
Withdrawing from the system, I find is kind of like withdrawing from a drug, you know, you're really dependent on it, and when you come off it, or you start to get the shakes, and you're wondering what the hell to do with yourself. You get all depressed and stuff like that. And if you don't have people around there helping you, or some kind of decent healthiness kind of going in there to put you back on the right track, you know, it's very, very difficult to stay off it. And I don't know if you've experienced this, Max, but I've experienced truthers who've become truthers and then gone straight back the other way again and decided that they don't want to be a truther anymore and they want to go back to sleep and or start working for the system to benefit themselves. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
have you seen this happen to people?
Well, knowledge is power, Vinny. You know, it's like becoming a second degree Freemason or something. You know, they got a long way to go till they hit the 33rd, but they got one thing figured out, so now they can exploit it. You know, oh, we know something, let's exploit it for profit. So I've experienced that, and it's it's a sad thing to see, but you know, at least they've gained a little more awareness, and maybe they'll come around in the end. But not too many. You know, I've actually been really pleasantly surprised over the last year and a half of really becoming more vocal about different issues. The number of friends I've got on Facebook and other social networks who have like taken up the torch and made my job a lot easier. You know, like I see these people who I've worked with or who I play outside with or who I just interact with online, and I see them posting stuff, and now it's people that were like liking my posts a couple months ago, and now I'm liking their posts and sharing their posts, you know, so it's pretty neat to see the awareness spread and see it in real time with your own friends.
Mm, yeah, that is cool. I've had multiple messages from people who've listened to this show and then started up their own radio shows as well. And that's really encouraging because ultimately the realization dawns on you that you can't do it all by yourself, and nor do you want it to all be done uniform. Like, I don't want everybody to be under the Vinnie Eastwood umbrella or Guerrilla Media or anything like that. I want everybody ultimately just to do their own thing, and yeah. I'd rather help them do their own thing and then not need me anymore than provide a solution for them that they ultimately will become dependent on. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's stressful to be like the prophet, you know what I mean? Or to be like the one that everyone's looking to for the answers. I think, you know, whether it's politics or running a business or whatever the thing is, it's like the less you have to do to micromanage people the less orders you have to give, the more effective the entire operation is working. Right. Yeah. It's like when things just flow fluidly, everyone's like going with the flow, and the flow is in such a way that everybody just gets it.
Yeah.
It's good. You know,
see, my business model is, I've dubbed it MMR, make myself redundant. All right. So if I can set up a way of doing things, where I will no longer, where my existence and skills and work is no longer necessary, then that's what I'll plan to do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to work at all. I don't want to be anybody's slave. I don't want to spend my life acquiring money, you know, acquiring these fake units of, you know, potential energy, I guess, fake ass money, pardon me with the word ass. But these fake bits of paper, so I can buy the necessities of life. I want to help build a world, you know, like a community that just works. You know? And it's something I've seen it before in my life in various settings, and it's like it's not difficult. It's how we're supposed to live. But we've all been kind of roped into this global slave network, monetary nonsense.
Yeah. Well, what occurred to me as you were saying that was something Jack Blood told me is there's no utopia. There just isn't. You know, it's a hopeless, insane quest to make everybody happy all the time. I don't think that's possible. And I think that a society that is happy all the time would be really full of weak people who are easily enslaved and manipulated.
Well, that's what we do in the States here. Everybody's on their psychotropic drugs. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm happy all the time because I'm taking mood suppressors or thought-suppressing drugs. And, you know, it's like Aldous Huxley's Soma, right? The drug that just kind of puts you in a stupor. So you just go along with whatever. And, you know, we definitely see that here in the States today. I was supposed to go to medical school. I was in medical school for a month and dropped out when I realized that the medical establishment was a profit-driven killing machine. you know, in some ways it can be helpful, but the whole pharmaceutical thing is just out of hand, and the corruption of the science and the treatment and the disconnect of diet from health and, you know, your environment from health is just unacceptable. So I dropped out and went back to the mountains, and, you know, it's easy to help people be healthy without bankrupting them at the same time. And here in the States, most bankruptcies are due to medical bills, you know, and at the same time, we're being poisoned with toxic food, fluoridated water, toxic medicines, toxic vaccines, electromagnetic pollution, aerosol, geoengineering, the list goes on and on.
What's really funny is that if you tried to list the amount of things that are really fracked up that are affecting you day by day, that list would take all day to recite, because everything is fracked.
Avoid I think the aspartame is one of the worst ones. That's why I always tell my friends, avoid anything diet or low fat, or, you know, there's a meme that goes around. It's like, if it says low fat, read that as chemical bleep storm, chemical dookie storm, chemical feces storm. And aspartame, you know, when you get into the history of how that thing was made legal, our dear friend Rumsfeld, working for the chemical companies back in the early 80s or late 70s, I forget. But, you know, the gums, the diet sodas, the sugar-free anything, just don't touch it, you know?
Yeah. Hey, you know what's interesting is, wasn't it Reagan that declared a war on fat? And so they came out with all this sugar-free, fat-free stuff, and people are fatter than ever.
Yeah. Oh, people have gotten impressively fat here in the States, Vinny. Like, I mean, it's... we're putting some work into it. But at the same time, I feel bad for these people, because the reason they're so fat, it's not that they're lazy, they're being poisoned. And I like looking at old books, looking at an old yearbook from like a university or a high school back in the 60s or 70s. And most of the girls or women, you know, everybody's pretty fit for the most part. And then you look at people these days, and it's just heartbreaking to see. And it's not because they're lazy. I mean, and yeah, we watch a lot of TV in the States, but that's not going to make you 400 pounds. You know, being sedentary, not, you know, having a minor, you know, irregularity between your caloric consumption and your caloric expenditure is not going to make you 400 pounds and bloated and diabetic with heart disease and asthma and depression and all this. It's because we're taking in all these toxins, and these things are being added to our food and our water and the air we breathe. So,
when you're watching TV, what are all the products that are advertised?
This is garbage. You know, it's like, oh, head on down to Mickey D's for the $4 value meal and poison your family at a discount. You know,
yeah.
Poison the whole family for $20. That's ridiculous. But I wasn't big, man. I didn't have a clue until a few years ago. And I finally turned my diet around. Like, a few years ago, I was suffering from, you know, I was living off of like gummy worms and just garbage food. And turned it around. It's like, this stuff does make a difference. And it's not that hard. There's a reason that the healthy food is more expensive, because they're trying to kill off all the poor, stupid people. So don't let them get you.
Yeah. And the thing is, healthy food is growable in your backyard until such a time as the chemtrails have really, really taken control. The soil's so toxic that you can't do that. But if you are capable of, let's say you gave up on watching 1 hour of TV a day, you know, just pick a show. Pick a show that you think, you know, it's really not worth it watching that show. I'm just sitting here on my ass just because I'm sitting on my ass. All right, let's go outside and let's dig in the garden. Let's grow myself some silver beets, some radishes, and some garlic, and some onions, and some cucumbers, and tomatoes, and what have you. Let's go outside and grow some food for that hour a day. And before you know it, not only would your grocery bill come right down, but also you'd be a little bit fitter and maybe even a little bit happier. healthier, and also you'd have more money in your pocket because you wouldn't have to buy expensive healthy food because you're just making it out of nothing.
Exactly. It's not, and it's really not that hard. When I was working for Mike, we were in Sonoma County, California, and we had a gardener on the property. You know, it was a couple acres, just like 2 acres, and we had like 50 different food crops in the ground. And you could live off of a couple acres. You know, if it really came down to it, you could. It wouldn't, you know, you're not going to have your Wonder Bread and your Diet Coke and all that. But when you eat that healthy, you know, stuff you've grown yourself or grown locally, you're a lot better off. And yeah, you're not feeding the system. One thing that's neat out here, you know, I'm in Jackson, Wyoming. There's a garden over the hill in Victor, Idaho called Cosmic Apple Garden. They've been around for maybe 20 years, and they do a farm share thing where you pay, like, you know, I think it's a, you can either volunteer at the farm or you can pay, I think it's, you know, $20 a week. And every week they drop off a huge box of produce at your house. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing you can set up in your own community and, you know, make money, stimulate the local economy, say bleep you to big agribusiness and the New World Order, and get healthy. You know, so anybody that's out there listening that likes to grow things, start a farm share. Super easy, and you know, it works.
They have box deliveries like that here in New Zealand too. I remember I used to be getting them. And what was strange to me is that there's an online kind of shopping section. So you just click, yeah, I want bananas this week. I want my pears, I want my apples, you know, just seasonals or whatever. And what was amazing is that I would go to the supermarket and try and buy what I got out of that organic box that's delivered, couriered to my house, and goes from an island on Waiheke Island and then coming into the city and all of that kind of stuff, all in several kgs. It must be really expensive to mail that stuff out. And it was actually a hell of a lot more expensive to buy all that crap at the supermarket to have half the quality and twice the inconvenience.
Well, it's got to come from a couple thousand miles away, you know, or maybe not in your instance, but you know, you read the statistic about the average distance food travels to your plate, and I don't know what the exact figure is now, but they always, you know, depends who's doing the research, but it's like, the average food traveled 1,800 miles to your plate. You know, it's just stupid. Just stupid. And we can do better than that.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be that freaking hard. What's really strange about our culture now, Max, I've found, is that people have gotten really, really relaxed about things, okay?
Yeah.
They're not that intense anymore. They're not looking for new challenges. They're not looking for new ways to live their life. They simply want to live their life how they're doing it and get really, really wasted at certain points, usually on weekends, so that they forget about the things that they don't like that they still have to continue to deal with because they're not dealing with them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's why alcohol is legal, you know, and that's why marijuana is illegal. Well, one of the reasons marijuana is illegal, at least in the States. I'm with you there, man. That's the same thing we're dealing with here in the States. Everybody, you know, it's like most of the police officers that are out there cracking protester skulls are just doing it for a paycheck. They don't enjoy it. And most of the people who, you know, most of the people I went to college with are working, you know, middle management or PR jobs for big businesses, and they don't like it. They don't enjoy their work. They don't respect the company they work for. They're just doing it for a paycheck, and it's sad.
It's a means to an end, and the problem is, it really will be their end eventually.
Right.
If they don't frickin' change something. And my girlfriend today, Max, sent me a text message that she's going to put in her notice for her job, and she's just going to create her own work from now on. So, you know, it's possible. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. the show that's all about jamming a big monkey wrench into the massive machines of the New World Order and the various descriptions of scumbag rain. My very special guest is Max Mogren, otherwise known as Mogrean, if it was pronounced properly, which it's not because he's American. Welcome back.
Yeah, we brutalize everything, including the languages of the world.
Yeah, yeah. I've always found it very interesting, the spelling differences between American English and New Zealand English, and it's like there's two Englishes, all right? There's American English and then there's English, right? American English spells so many things differently to what the rest of the English-speaking world does. You know, like they don't spell it the same as Canadians or people in the UK or New Zealanders or Australians or South Africans or anybody else that speaks English. There's a very specific American English. And all it does is usually spell things a little incorrectly. And that's really the hallmark of it, isn't it? I don't understand what the hell's going on here. Isn't English English?
No, I think it was originally like a marketing thing. Like if you, let's say it was Vinny's Cookie Stand, you know, you got COOKIE selling cookies. Well, Max's Cookie Stand, we're going to have KOOKKIE. Put a little subtle racism in there. Put some, and just grab their attention with the, oh, it's spelled wrong, but it still says cookie, you know?
Yeah.
Or well, cookie, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah, or like Blue Shield is spelled BLU Shield. You know, it's a marketing thing, isn't it? You spell things incorrectly.
Yeah,
what is that? I can't spell, therefore buy my product.
Well, you know, our entire reality in the U.S. has been marketed to us. You know, most of our beliefs have been marketed to us, so it's not a surprise. But it's. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah. It's like Bill Hicks said, if there's anybody listening to this that is in marketing or advertising, kill yourself. No,
right.
No, don't laugh. There's no fucking joke here. If you're in marketing or advertising, kill yourself. Doesn't matter how you do it. You are Satan's little helpers. Kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself now. Right, back to the show.
Yeah.
I think he was deadly serious.
Well, I studied, you know, in university, I studied communication, marketing, media, and it's true, the entire, you know, since Edward Bernays took over, you know, took the Freudian psychology and applied it to marketing, the basic idea is we're going to take people's subconscious desires, whether it's love or affection or family or nurturing your children or whatever it is, we're going to take it and we're going to twist it. So you buy a product, right? So, yeah, it's pretty satanic bull crap, you know, to be engaging in, to be taking people's internal desires and twisting them. You know, a good example, I like the classic American beer commercials where, you know, it's like, oh, if I drink this beer, I'm going to be on a beach with all these women in bikinis and going to be... It'd be awesome, but really you're just going to be like a drunk dude sitting in his basement watching TV and drinking this additive laced garbage toxic beer out of an aluminum can. So have a little Alzheimer's with your delicious beverage.
Well, see, I've got this real fear that people actually believe the advertisements. Like even people like us, when they see an advertisement, they will believe it. I mean, I think it might have been my girlfriend Sarah just got herself some Coke Zero or something like that to lose weight, and I was just like, baby, did they tell you that it was going to be just as good for you and just like Coke? Yeah, well, that's advertising, okay? They were lying to you, every single word, all right? It's not good for you in any way, shape, or form. It's probably just worse for you. That's how they work.
Yeah.
They give you something that's worse and tell you that it's better so that you'll buy the worst thing that takes half as much frickin' effort to create. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that's marketing, you know? The entire purpose of corporations, whether it's a media corporation or a product selling corporation or a government. You know, most of the governments, the U.S. government is a corporation. It has been for over a century. The purpose of their existence is profit and power. Anything else is public relations. So the marketing is just selling you a lie. Whatever will sell the most of their product is what they're going to tell you. So you know how it is.
You've got to wonder. All these, I know a guy in New Zealand called John Ansell, and he used to work for the major government parties and things like that and do their advertising campaigns for them. He's a very successful ad man. Now he's broke as a mofo trying to spread the truth about stuff, you know, as you do sometimes when you get disillusioned with the system. And what occurs to me is that, hey, politics is about marketing and marketing is about lies. Therefore, politics is about lies.
Yeah, right. Well, we got no shortage of evidence of that. You know, our dear friend, the Obamer, you know, he said he was going to close Guantanamo, said he was going to end the wars, said he was going to give everybody universal death care. And here we are. We got the death care, but we still got Guantanamo. We still got the wars, and we still got, now we got NDAA. Now we got the Christopher Dorner drone manhunt, and we've got the exceptionally aggressive gun control agenda here in this country. So it's you know, he's just following the globalist blueprint to a T. And yeah, politics is lies. Marketing, it's a lie. Hope and change. You better hope that we don't change things in such a way that kills you. Right?
Yeah. And have you ever seen the documentary Exit Through the Gift Shop by Banksy? Really great documentary about street art and graffiti. And the dude who created the blue-red sort of Obama image, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Shepard Farley.
Yeah, okay. Right. So he's the one. He made a name for himself doing images like that of Andre the Giant and posting them everywhere. You know? Obey. And what's interesting is that they get somebody who's who's totally against, you know, everything that the government stands for, who's really effective at getting his message across, to then ally himself with the government and help them get their message across. That's marketing. Getting your image out and getting your message believed by people, even though you yourself may or may not believe in it.
Yeah. Well, what was it? That was, you know, when Farley came out with his, when Occupy got started before the big crackdown, he came out with the Obama poster and said, "Mr. President, we hope you're on our side." You know, that's what his original poster said. I took that shit and changed it to make it say, "We are the hope." You know, like I took that shit and photoshopped it. I'm not a graphic designer, but I can delete some text and add some text. And so I was working for Mikey. That's one of the things I did. And it's good. Yeah. It's funny. I love it when a meme takes on a life of its own, like something you created. All of a sudden you see somebody else sharing it and your name's not even attached to it anymore. And that's one that I've seen. It's like, oh, we had this, you know, obey the giant, obey the Obama. We hope that the president's going to, you know, join us in, you know, prosecuting Wall Street and breaking up the banks and changing the monetary system so it's not a slave labor bullshit. Sorry, I almost swore again. So it's not a slave labor system to make everybody devote their lives to nonsense.
I think it's great to just make fun of the nonsense. You know, I would really love to see an image of Obama as a homeless person holding a little styrofoam cup that says change on it.
There you go. There's your hope and change right there. Yeah, you know, I think, Voltaire is a good example. I just read Voltaire's biography. And it's funny, your previous guest, what's his name? Sorry, I just want to...
Mark O'Neill.
MC O'Neill. Mark O'Neill, thank you. I just brought up his site again. You know, he mentioned Dune. I just read the first book of Dune. I've had it for years, and I kind of, like, read the first chapter and then forgot about it, but finally reread the book, and that book is really good. like, really explains a lot of, you know, how the systems of power work and how treachery and deception and, you know, gloved aggression works. So, you know, it was a good book to read. It was cool to see him bring it up. But back to Voltaire, you know, the whole purpose of his thing, he was ridiculing the monarchy, ridiculing the church, and his work caused, you know, it was like the direct cause of the French Revolution. It didn't happen until 40 years after he died, but he did it. You know what I mean? So it's cool to see how, you know, getting the right ideas out to the masses does change things. You might not think it happens. It doesn't happen overnight. Never has. But it definitely, the awareness grows. And cool.
And now France, you, I think you get about maybe 50% of your paycheck taken away through taxes, and it's illegal to wear a burqa in the street.
Yeah, I mean, it's a constant fight against oppression, right?
Yeah, it's a never-ending saga. And you know what? I think without these never-ending struggles, life would be pretty fracking boring because it would be devoid of challenge.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Mm-hmm. Keep up the fight. Keep up the challenge, because through challenge and fighting, you grow stronger. And there's no point being weak and unchallenged. Thank you, Max. Mulgrain, what's your website, man?
Oilfreefun.com. OILFREEFUN.com. I'm also very active on Facebook. Just Google me, Mac, MOGREN.
All right. Excellent. Max Mogren, oilfreefun.com. He's also in Sports Illustrated coming up, and that's not oil free there. We'll be right back. Again, sometime. See you later.